This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now we have what seems like our annual health service crisis. This time, of course, it seems even worse than before. People are in terrible situations. In Limerick, A&E, for example, which is regarded as probably being the worst in the country, the situation is desperate. People on trolleys, elsewhere, people can't even get to that. And of course, the nurses and doctors are burnt out, sick of what they have to endure every day of the year, really. And on the Brendan O'Connor radio program yesterday morning, Dr. Emily O'Connor, who's a consultant in emergency medicine, was really heartrending to listen to her talk about nurses and young doctors being broken. And she said at one stage, we're done. It's a terrible crisis for patients. It is a terrible situation for people who should be really not suffering as they try to do the work of caring for people in need of healthcare. To discuss this healthcare crisis, where it originates from, we're joined now by Fionnán Sheehan. Fionnán is Ireland editor for independent newspapers and one of the most experienced political journalists in the country. Fionnán, this is, as I suggested, an annual affair, but it does appear to be worse this year than it's ever been. The scenes in Limerick, which I witnessed on Friday night, I think, in A&E, were just horrific. And the stories of nurses being broken, feeling broken and ill and done, the images of that for nurses and doctors is so horrific. How have we got to here, Fionnán? And I'm bearing in mind that, for example, the chaos. The Irish Times has a lead story today. Hundreds in hospital while 1,000 care home beds are empty. This just seems like maladministration. Where have we come from and where are we going with a health service that can treat people this badly?
It's multifaceted. It's not just the case that you can pin this down and say, this is the reason for this. And if we just fix that one problem, then everything else will be fine. For example, a week ago, you had a new record, a most unwanted record of 930 people on trolleys awaiting a hospital bed. This week, that's down to just under 500. So that's a substantial reduction along the way, nearly halving the numbers who are on trolleys. And that is being attributed to more staff coming in over the weekend, but a consultant and nurse level, and also the ability to discharge patients to appropriate facilities, because you can't just send people who are still sick back out there into the community and to their own homes. They'll often need step down facilities and so on. So that's one example of how, yes, things can be run slightly better, a more joined up approach towards a crisis and you deliver a result. Nonetheless, you still have 500 people on trolleys effectively overnight. But you have got a wide range of factors that have all come together on this occasion. We're not out of the COVID-19 pandemic yet. There is still elements of COVID circulating. The last couple of years with the prevalence of COVID-19 as a virus, we have now seen a resurgence in other flu-like viruses this year. And also RSV. So you have a range of respiratory illnesses kind of going around like a cocktail almost at this stage, where go back 5 years and it would have been quite clear that the majority of people who were getting severely ill, perhaps they had the one strain of the flu. We had that also during COVID-19. This year is different in that it is so diverse. And then a big factor is our aging population. So you do have a disproportionate number of elderly people being admitted to hospital because they are getting severely ill. It takes a longer time for them to be discharged, and they often need to be discharged to not only be discharged because they're well enough to be discharged, but a place found for them to go to. So some of it can be attributed just to pure demographics. And we also have to bear in mind our population is at its highest level now at 5 million since the famine 175 years ago. So that's all putting various degrees of pressure on a system that has been strained, to say the least, I suppose, in recent years as a result of COVID-19, and is now coming back off the back of that, seemingly into what people regarded as a back-to-normal style winter season, which really wasn't, because it was worse from a medical perspective in terms of the number of viruses out there. So you have all of this contributing to a perfect storm. On the flip side, you do have a large amount of investment in the health service. It's at a higher level than before. You're talking about one in every 5 euros that's spent goes on the health service. There is progress being made on things such as a consultant's contract that is for public hospitals only. You'll be told that there's plenty of capital investment coming down the track in terms of additional medical facilities, and that there's greater focus on primary care. But largely speaking, the number of people in the country and the aging population, the hospital system has not kept pace with the number of beds, and hence you get this bottleneck that develops pretty much every January. And this year has been quite surprising in that it's a classic case of, well, you saw this one coming, lad, so why weren't you prepared on this occasion? So we have seen that change in fortunes, that change of tactic over the course of this weekend to try and alleviate some of that pressure. And the question being raised now is, well, why wasn't this ready weeks ago? I mean, the HSE management are saying, oh, the approach we took this weekend wasn't down to criticism. And you're kind of saying, well, it was down to criticism. It was down to the patient safety concerns that there were around the number of people that were on trolleys and the unsatisfactory treatment that people were being provided with. We haven't yet got to a point where you can actually directly turn around and say this number of deaths happened as a result of that overcrowding. But nonetheless, international studies will show where you have overcrowded hospitals, where you have delays in treating patients, and they're left for a long time before being admitted or being triaged, that does result in higher levels of mortality. So, you know, there are consequences beyond. You're not just talking about patient discomfort here and people being on trolleys and wards. There are actual medical consequences as a result of this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're concerned about mental health or looking to get into self-improvement, join me at the Piece by Piece podcast. There, I'm interviewing everyday people and experts alike about how to overcome difficulties around mental health. Speaking of which, I just released an interview with a mental health historian and another with two friends who are healthcare workers.
If these conversations interest you, check us out at Piece by Piece. That's Piece with an A, B-I, and then Piece with an I. Thank you so much.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
In a poll in yesterday Sunday Independent, an unbelievable figure of 75% said they would only go to A&E if their lives depended on it. Now, the reliability of polls such as this on this topic, you'd have to factor in. Nevertheless, the other issue is that the INMO, the Irish Nurses and Midwives Organization, Phil Nehey is the General Secretary, and she is now talking about strike action. And to contextualize it, of course, we must acknowledge, if you look across the water in Britain, it appears to be, if anything, even worse. And the nurses are, in fact, on strike. The other thing, Fionnuala, is that many nurses and junior doctors now, when they train here, they leave as soon as they have the qualification. And I'm looking at the lists of, and this is where the politics come in, of ministers for health. Brian Cowan was Minister of Health. Micheál Martin set up the HSE. Mary Harney was Minister of Health for about 7 years. James Riley, who will ever forget James Riley? Leo Varadkar, a doctor himself. Simon Harris for 4 years, and the incumbent is Stephen Donnelly. Is there something that all of those people share in common, or is there something... And I want to talk about Sláinte Care, which was to be a new era that would rid us of most of our problems. And where is Sláinte Care now?
By the way, something that comes across in that list of health ministers that you've identified there over the past generation, you had three Taoiseach in there.
Yes.
For a substantial period of time as well in Mary Harney, and yes, our current Taoiseach, former Taoiseach Micheál Martin. So there's not exactly a shortage of very senior figures, and each of them will turn around and say there were individual things that they achieved, but yet we're still left with this interminable problem that seems to be a never-ending discussion about healthcare reform.
Can we say it's not about money? Is that fair to say? Or in the case of the Irish Times headline this morning, it appears about competence.
Well,
you've 1,000 beds in a care homes, and you've people who can't get out of hospital because there's no beds.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's always about money. I mean, if you put more money into the equation, you're supposed to get better outcomes. Now, that's debatable.
Yeah.
In some cases in this country, in terms of housing and health and education, but nonetheless, yeah. I mean, there is this ongoing debate. Is it simply about the management in individual hospitals? Is that why there is a problem?
Yes.
You mentioned the University of Limerick, UHL, University Hospital Limerick. And again, overnight, the largest number of patients on trolleys, and people will turn around and say, well, is that down to the management of the hospital? Is it down to the level of staffing? Or is it down to the large catchment area that you have in the Midwest that has all been funneled now into one particular hospital after you had emergency departments in other hospitals in that region closed down? So again, you can turn around to pretty much every acute hospital in the country, look at their numbers of patients on trolleys and say there is a specific reason for this, which isn't necessarily down to the management or the caseloads, but is actually just down to specific factors in that region that is putting it upon people. What Sláintecare was supposed to do was do away with the two-tier health system. We had a previous shot at this a decade ago, which failed miserably, and that was James Riley's view of a Dutch model of the health service, which would be universal health insurance, which would basically mean if you don't have health insurance, the state will give you health insurance, and therefore you'll be on the same level as private patients. In this case, Sláintecare is supposed to provide a universal healthcare model. It's supposed to follow the example of other European countries. It came about as a result of a kind of a consensus view that was come to in the wake of the 2016 general election, when basically we didn't have a majority government, let's remember. And it is down to that idea that you tackle the discrepancy in waiting times between private health insurance and public patients, and you basically seek to eliminate that.
The advantages for people with private healthcare, and I confess that I have private healthcare, and I am therefore fortunate enough to have preferential treatment in this area. I don't believe, though, that your means should be a factor when you're sick. And this principle, if you like, seemed to be at the heart of Sláintecare. I saw about a year ago, Roisin Shortall, who's on the health committee of the Dáil, and Robert Watt, who's the Secretary General, then the new Secretary General, still the Secretary General of the Department of Health. Mr. Watt is a renowned, very bullish civil servant, but he's renowned for being blunt. He had a disagreement with Roisin Shortall, who had been, ironically, junior minister under James Riley when she resigned because of Dr. Riley's behaviour, as she saw it. They had a row, and it did seem as if Secretary General Watt was not an enthusiast for Sláintecare, but it's still nominally, anyway, going.
Yeah, I mean, apart from phasing out the private beds in public hospitals and therefore gearing up public hospitals to perform more procedures and be able to focus solely on public patients and level the paying pitch in that regard, along with expanding primary care to try and move as much healthcare away from the hospital environment back into local communities. The big reorganizational structure that Sláintecare is supposed to bring about is kind of regional health areas,
yes,
where you basically divide up the country into six regions and say, right, all the healthcare that is required of people should be provided in this region, with, you know, up to a certain point, there'll obviously be very specialist hospitals that will do rare procedures or will specialize in a particular area. But that was the thesis. This would get away from the current HSE structure. It would also get away from the current hospital groups. It would rather mimic the old school health boards that we had in place before the HSE was established, where you had eight different health boards across the country. And basically that transformation hasn't happened yet. We've had a number of issues within the Department of Health around where this policy is going. In principle, you're told, oh yeah, absolutely, all in favor of doing away with private beds in public hospitals. Hence, we have a new consultants public only contract. That's part of that thesis. All in favor of expanding of primary care, but not too keen on devolving authority out to the regions,
yes,
away from the central hub, which is very often the case in terms of any structure of government. People don't like to devolve power over to others that are beyond their control. The argument coming back from those who are circulating around the Department of Health is, we had a global pandemic. It tested and, if anything, reformed health service delivery in this country and beyond faster, literally overnight, compared to any other event that has happened in the previous generation.
In other words, the nurses and doctors rose to the challenge of the occasion. Is that what you're effectively saying?
That and the system did change overnight. So from basic things such as your doctor being able to provide an electronic prescription for you, which made renewals an awful lot easier, which meant that, yes, people didn't have to go back and forth to GPs. That literally just happened overnight. That was held up for years, that people were having to go to get a physical script. They were now able to email the script to your chemist, and you could cut out that middleman system of having to go and physically queue to see a doctor. Small things like that, right up to and including a testing system for COVID-19, which pretty much everybody in the country had to avail of at one time or another, and a national vaccination service. And the point being made by those within the Department of Health and somebody in the HSE as well is, do we really want 8 different vaccination services operate, or 6 different vaccination services operate in the country at different paces with different people administering it? Because that's what we're going to end up with if we have 8 different autonomous regional authorities in charge of health. And what actually we were seeing during COVID-19 was, there is an argument to be said for having that centralized delivery of services that then goes out with the one single policy across the country. You can argue the same around the delivery, something that we saw majorly during that crisis was the delivery of PPE. That was all centralized as well. We also had a fairly groundbreaking agreement with private hospitals in terms of the provision of beds.
Yes.
Now, the argument now is that not enough of those beds were taken up and that there was a lot of money wasted. But nonetheless, that was all done centrally. It wasn't done by regional authorities striking their own deals and doing their own negotiations. So basically, what has become of Sláinte Care is, it's now in something of a limbo, whereby the political system in Leinster House is saying, look, we all agreed to this. All of the parties have signed up for it. All of the parties are still signed up to it. And the Department of Health are saying, well, we're kind of in favour of it, but we think it has to be amended on foot of what happened during COVID-19. But nobody is really getting around to saying that the thing has to be torn up and looked at again. So this often happens in agreements that you have.
I must refer back to the encounter between Roisin Shortall, who's the leader of the Social Democrats, and Robert Watt. The distinct impression I took away from that, and I think I saw that reflected in newspaper reports afterwards, was that Robert Watt wasn't at all sure that Sláinte Care was a very good idea. It was a devolving power out of the department.
Yeah, that's very much consistent with the view that you're hearing from people in the Department of Health, that they're unsure that this is a good idea at this point. They're basically saying maybe it was back in 2016, but that the game has changed so substantially in the last couple of years as a result of COVID-19, that is not what we need now. Now, you'd have to say, there is a bit of a symptom of, this is a symptom of dysfunction within the delivery of health services in this country, where what one arm is saying is not necessarily what another arm is saying. So in this case, you have the political system saying, Sláintecéir, all systems going at, and you have the health system saying, well, no, hold your horses, we're not quite there yet. You were seeing on a very micro level a similar case emerging in the case of Navan General Hospital.
Yes.
Where the HSE was saying, this hospital is now dangerous, lives will be lost, the level of care that can be provided here is not up to scratch, so therefore we have to close down the emergency department for anything that is regarded as beyond minor injuries and redirect those patients towards Our Ladies in Drogheda and also towards Blanchardstown and Mullingar if needs be. The political system and the Department of Health pushed back and said, oh, no, we're not up for doing that. We don't want that move to be made. So again, we've seen this repeated over the years. What one element is saying is not necessarily consistent with what another is saying. And that has probably been seen to be exacerbated over the course of the last couple of years, where you saw greater levels of power being attributed to different elements of the health system. The HSE, its budget and its capacity for delivering services expanded quite dramatically during COVID-19. Therefore, so did its power. You saw effectively disagreements between officials such as the chief medical officer and the Minister for Health, yes, and government as a whole happening during COVID-19 as well. So there is a point here, though, Eamon, that why would you take a plan that was developed in 2016 when we weren't really taking account of the ability of global pandemics to close down the world? Why would you not take that on board now when you're looking at putting a new system in place?
So in the case of the nurses and junior doctors who have to live with this and who are, as was, you know, has been said many times, but very poignantly articulated by Dr. O'Connor on the radio yesterday morning, you are dealing with people that we and the political system have broken. And that's a direct quote. And nurses and junior doctors, particularly nurses, who are saying, we're done. We can't do anymore. That is, I don't want to sound crude, but are there votes in health? Because the way it's managed and the carelessness evident when it repeats itself every year leads me to believe that there are no votes in it. And therefore, in the political system, it is not a priority. And that, as you said, a lot of Taoiseach Micheál Martin, Brian Cowan, Mary Harney, a leader of a party, Leo Varadkar, now the Taoiseach, a lot of heavy hitters have been in that department. But still, none of them have got the job done at all.
A lot of them have left quite frustrated, ultimately. I mean, Leo Varadkar was offered the opportunity, famously, by Enda Kenny to go back into that department in 2016. He said, no, thanks very much, I'll move on elsewhere. So it's not as if too many of them have come out of that department with their reputations enhanced. They probably can in terms of individual measures. Micheál Martin will talk about cardiac care, the restructuring of the HSE, the smoking ban.
Cancer care was centralised by Mary Harney.
Cancer care appears
to have been a success.
And she will rightly turn around and say she developed the new cancer care model. The fair deal system for nursing homes also came in during her time, which is now pivotal for anybody there. So there will be individual ministers will point to certain particular areas and say, I did that. For example, Leo Varadkar keeps going around saying that he delivered medical cards for young children now hitting up to the age of six, when in fact that was Dr. James Riley's idea and he was the one who got that ball rolling. So you're going to have individual ministers will point saying, but they won't be able to say they got the overall picture right. So that was the argument around Sláintecéir, that it was a whole new approach and that it was a different way of coming at things. Does health matter? Well, if you look at surveys around about election time, I'm not just talking about in terms of who you're voting for in terms of a party, in terms of election surveys that look at the reasons why people vote in particular ways, what are the number one issues that are on their agendas. Health is predominantly right up there. It's probably been housing has yes. come on a similar plateau to it in recent times. But people do say that health does matter. It's certainly the best way to activate and agitate a local population in a particular part of the country is to tell them that a hospital is being downgraded in your area, or some form of health service delivery in your area is changing, and it will result in substantial protests. So it does get people active. So maybe there is that disconnect between people saying that it is a major issue for them and actually how they vote, because you don't just have political parties that will come out and say, we are only interested in health. That is the only issue on our yes. agenda. Yeah. But you do tend to get independents elected who are running solely on health service agendas. Yes. For example, Matt Shanahan, currently down in Waterford, was elected at the last election, and his main platform was on cardiac services at Waterford Hospital. So, you know, that still does happen. But yeah, I agree with
Did
you.
Did he get a result?
He's not there yet, no. I mean, right. he'd still argue that the promises haven't been delivered upon.
I know that particular
upon.
Area, and you've yeah. got to go to Cork at certain stuff. If it happens, if you have a stroke or a heart attack in the yeah. middle of the night, I mean, it's criminal.
And the argument is that the services that were promised haven't been delivered upon yet. So, yeah, I think you have a point. What people say is the number one issue on their agenda very often isn't the reason why they vote in a particular right. way at the election time.
Final speculation I'll ask you to indulge in. You might want to, Fionnán, but no one knows better than you. Very few observers of Leinster House. Is Sláinte Kerr dead?
I've thought that Sláinte Kerr has been dead since the last general election. Since we got a yes. government that has a substantial majority, I didn't really see that consensus view that came about with dealing with Sláinte Kerr was going to survive. I think it was of its time. I think as you dig deep into it as well, there are certain elements of it that are a bit kumbaya, that don't particularly answer the question around, well, what exactly is happening with the private healthcare system? Because ultimately, you were talking about you have private healthcare, but the argument is that we also need people to have private healthcare, because if you were to give up your private healthcare in the morning, you would then be another person dependent upon the public yes. healthcare system, which yes. is struggling dramatically following COVID-19 and has the best part of a million people. I think it was 920,000 people awaiting a procedure at this time. So Sláinte Kerr provided a particular model, but I don't think it answered all of the difficult questions that there are around how our healthcare system is to be modelled going into the future. And there very definitely is question marks over whether we are wise to go back to what looks to all intents and purposes as an old school health board model, which then, you know, we saw that old model in place. I'm around journalism long enough to have been covering meetings of the Southern Health Board, which covered Cork and Kerry. It all became very politicized. It became very parish pump. If one hospital got something, then another hospital in another county needed to get the same thing. It was very difficult to centralize and specialize in particular services when you had those arguments going on around how you were going to spend your budget. So I'm not really convinced that though that model of six regions is the best way to go, and that certainly deserves to be debated out at this point. But that's up to the Minister for Health to articulate. We need to hear the Minister for Health say, is Sláinte Kerr what he sees as the model going forward? Is that what all three parties in government are fully signed up to, or are they just tipping along until the next general election, just seeing what they can get done?
Okay, Fionnán, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and we're very grateful to you. Fionnán Sheehan is Ireland editor of Independent Newspapers, and we're very grateful to Fionnán, to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.